Blog Talk Radio.
Cross your fingers, kids. We may have found a way to shut up the British chick. We'll explain later. Ooh. Good evening and welcome to Erie House Old Time Radio, or Oldie Timey Radio, if you will. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show. I am accompanied by...
I have a problem. I was crossing my fingers when you told me to, but I had my finger in my nose, and now I'm really in trouble. I'm Dave Bickley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, and we're here with...
I have no idea who I am.
I don't know, but I'm not shaking hands with that guy.
But on Saturdays,
sure.
I'm Guy the Goo, please.
I promise to wipe it off on my shirt sleeve.
Put on some gloves. Put on some gloves.
Yeah, put on some gloves before you insert your finger anywhere.
That's right. Anyway,
especially winter
gloves.
Make
all of this go
big
away
furry
by
gloves.
Vanishing.
Big
We're going to vanish before your very ears tonight. That's right.
Yeah, and Dale, I think we need to start them off with a warning. Gar has been on the coffee today.
Oh, good heavens.
Yeah, buddy.
We are fouled up.
And cooled up, too.
We certainly are.
Juice.
Count them three stories of disappearing. That's right. It's our vanishing act tonight, gang. With Haunting Hour, Nick Carter, and say it, Gar.
Quiet, please. Quiet, please. Quiet.
I like your deep
please.
Voice.
Here you go.
Quiet, please.
Quiet, please.
Quiet, please. Another old-time radio program. And all three about disappearing in one way or another.
Yeah, and Nick Carter, master detective, his first visit here to Erie House Radio.
Yay, first time on the channel.
No. No way.
Yep,
no.
Yep.
Way?
Ow. Yep, absolutely.
Ow. We've been on air 962 years. Nick Carter, first
and
time?
We have.
What?
And our very first time, yes, indeed.
This is crazy.
I'm not always a big. I've not always been a big fan of Nick Carter because I heard a couple episodes and I said, "Man, what crappy mysteries!" But you know what? I've started to get into him. I started to get into him late, and he actually has some pretty cool stories here and there. So
brutal honesty.
Yeah, I guess.
That's
I can't
why
remember,
he was never
he?
Here.
I get right. Nick Carter, I think one of the episodes, he meets a witch who actually gets on a broom and flies around.
I think
find out that
Boston
later.
Boston Blackie
Was
did that
Boston
too.
Boston Blackie that did that?
Yeah.
I could be confused. Okay.
I think it was Boston Blackie.
Maybe it's both.
Ooh. Could be.
I don't know. Could be.
That witch really gets around, man.
Yep.
Hmm?
Anywho,
I'm not
it's
into
all
website.
all about disappearance tonight. Gosh, I remember the first time I saw the Claude Rains version of Invisible Man from the 1930s, and what a great film! It was way ahead of its time with special effects.
It was, and if you've ever watched Sven Gulli host it, he shows how they did some of those special effects. It wasn't, although it was ahead of its time, they weren't that difficult the special effects to do. So that's why I have enjoyed watching Sven Gulli host that movie.
I had to wait until I was an adult to actually become enraptured with the Invisible Man film due to that one lady that screams.
Your mother? Your mother?
Well, you know, you drop a brick on your mom's toe, she screams a little bit while you're watching the film, you know.
All I had to do was show my face, and it was...
Well, yeah, I've seen your face, so I get it, yeah.
Yeah, there you go, see?
When I was born, the doctor slapped my mother instead of me, yeah.
That's right.
And then she slapped your dad.
And this is why we're on radio, folks. This is why we're on radio. Bringing you the very finest in oldie-timey radio. Probably should
like
get
it.
Started at some point.
Yeah.
Because we got a lot of this
stuff. Whole lot of radio. So where are we starting?
Whole lot of radio.
You talked about Nick Carter. Are we going there first?
Yeah, why don't we? Nick Carter, a new visitor. a new visitor here to Area House Radio, mutual radio crime drama based on the fictional private detective Nick Carter from Street and Smith's Dime Novels. Once again, we have another radio show that came out of the pulp magazines, guys, and first came to radio as The Return of Nick Carter, a reference to the character's pulp origins, but was soon changed the title to Nick Carter, Master Detective. Very
I tell you what, I'd love to get my hands on some of those old-time pulps. Even reprints, or a reprint book, I would do it. I would, because some of that stuff is just amazing. And here's a radio story about Nick Carter, Master Detective. This one's called Case of the Disappearing Corpse. And it's from
April 9th, 1946.
So they say.
Yes, I agree.
What's the matter? What is it?
It's a case for Nick Carter, Master Detective.
Yes, it's another case for that most famous of all manhunters, the detective whose ability at solving crime is unequaled in the history of detective fiction, Nick Carter, Master Detective.
My safe, you thief!
Give me a...
A thunderstorm rages outside. A shot. A man falls dead. So begins a strange adventure for Nick Carter, Master Detective. An adventure in which a murder seemed to be no murder at all. And a dead body vanished into thin air. The Case of the Disappearing Corpse.
Good morning, Matty.
Oh, how are you, Nick? What brings you down here to headquarters so early in the morning? It's only just 10 o'clock.
Well, I've been out in the country for the past couple of weeks writing an article on crime detection methods. Finished it last night.
Huh?
Just stopped in on my way back to my office past the time of day. That's what's doing.
Yeah, it's pretty quiet, Nick. Nothing exciting's happened in the past 10 days.
Oh, Matty, haven't you even got one simple little murder just to keep me in practice? I'm bored.
Well, would you be interested in checking up on a suicide?
Now, what's there to investigate about a suicide?
Well, you never can tell, Nick. I just got a report that a guy bumped himself off in an uptown apartment house. I was going up to take a look at it myself, but the commissioner just called and wants to see him in his office right away. You want to go up in my place?
Oh, I don't know, Matty.
Well, if it's just the usual routine, you can lay off after you make the call.
Anybody else going up?
Medical examiners going along.
Well, I called my office a few minutes ago, and Patsy had nothing for me, so I might as well run up and see what it's all about. What's the address?
Oh, yeah, it's 717 West Hampton Street, apartment 4.
Okay, Matty. See you when we get back. Well, this is West Hampton Street. What was that number, Doc?
717. Ought to be just ahead, Nick.
Oh, yeah, 695, 701, 709. There it is,
yeah.
717.
Oh, that's a pretty swanky place, Nick. You can't live here on a white-collar salary.
Ah, here's the elevator. Waiting for us. Apartment 4, wasn't it?
Yeah. Get in and push the button.
Across the hall here.
Yes, sir.
Police department. You report a suicide?
Oh, yes, sir. Won't you come in, please?
Thank you.
The body's right in the living room there, to your left.
Oh, yes. I see it.
Well, doesn't seem to be much of a question about it being suicide. You're the butler?
Yes, sir. My name is Jordan.
What do you know about this, Jordan?
Very little, sir. Mr. Warner, he's Mr. Miller's nephew, came in about an hour ago and found his uncle lying there in the middle of the floor. I hadn't come down, but he called me and I reported it to the police. I've touched nothing since.
Where's Mr. Warner now? Is he here?
Yes, sir. He's upstairs in the library. He'll be down in a moment.
I see. This dead man? Mr. Miller?
Yes, sir. Mr. Anthony Miller. This is his apartment. His niece and I live here with him.
Where's his niece now?
She's dressing, sir. She'll be down with you shortly.
This is a duplex apartment, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Reception hall, living room, dining room, and kitchen on this floor. Library and three bedrooms on the second floor.
Oh, pretty swank, I'd say. Pretty stuffy, I'd say. Well, thank you, Jordan. Well, as soon as the others come down, bring them in here, will you?
Yes, at once, sir.
Well, Doc, how's it look?
Oh, pretty cut and dried. Pistol in his hand, a hole in his head with powder stains around it. Looks like suicide, all right.
How long has he been dead?
Must have been killed about 3 o'clock.
Beg your pardon, sir. Here's Mr. Warner, Mr. Miller's nephew.
Oh, how do you do, Mr. Warner? I'm Nick Carter.
Nick Carter?
Yes. I'm acting for Sergeant Matheson of the Metropolitan Police. Oh, by the way, Jordan.
Yes.
I left word for my two assistants to meet me here as soon as they could. When they arrive, will you let me know, please?
Of course. At once, sir.
Mr. Warner, I understand you found your uncle's body.
That's right, Mr. Carter. I did.
Will you tell us about it?
Well, of course. When I was here last week, I left my camera here. I wanted to take some pictures this morning, so I dropped in here about 9:30 to pick it up.
Who let you in?
No one, Mr. Carter. I have my own key to the apartment. I came into the living room here, saw my uncle lying there on the floor, obviously dead. So I called Jordan, who came down immediately and phoned the police. That's about all.
Was the outer apartment door locked when you came in?
Yes. Both the regular safety lock and the regular lock were on.
Mm-hmm. There any windows opening under the fire escapes?
They were all fastened securely, sir. I checked them myself to make sure.
Then no one could have come in from the outside.
No, hardly. Not with the door and windows all locked as they were.
I see.
Mr. Carter, what's the idea of all these questions? It was suicide, wasn't it?
Yes, purely routine, that's all. Has anything in this room been touched since the body was found?
No, not a thing.
Good. That your uncle's pistol in his hand?
It looks like it, yes.
Here, let me take it. You recognize it?
Well,
no, don't touch it. There may be fingerprints on it. That's why I'm holding it with my handkerchief.
Yes. Yes, that's my Uncle Gunn, all right. There's no question about that.
Yes, sir. It's Mr. Miller's gun, Mr. Carter. I've seen it often.
Mm-hmm. And one of the shells is empty. And one shot been fired.
Well, that's all it took to kill him.
Hey, wait a minute.
Oh, what is it?
This is unusual, to say the least. There's an empty shell in the chamber, but the pistol barrel is clean.
What's that, Nick?
You see? Either the barrel has been cleaned since the shot was fired, or the shot wasn't fired from this gun.
Then this can't be suicide.
Can't be suicide?
No. It's definitely not suicide. It's murder.
Murder, sir?
But where's the old man's niece? Say she lives here?
Yes, sir. She'd be down directly, sir.
Mr. Carter, she knows nothing about this. She was still asleep when we phoned the police. Jordan called her afterward.
That's right, sir. I did. She knows nothing of this.
Maybe and maybe not. I'd like to talk to her anyway, because from what you tell me about the door and windows all being locked, and from the condition of the murder weapon, this must have been an inside job. One of you three is guilty.
Well, now look here, Mr. Carter.
Sorry, Mr. Warner. This is now in the hands of the police. May I use your phone, please?
There's one on the desk, sir.
Oh, that one's not working, Mr. Carter. If you come with me, I'll show you the one in the library upstairs.
Right?
I know that one's all right. This one has a short circuit or something.
Thanks. Be right back, Doc.
Right, Nick.
Sorry to trouble you.
No, not at all.
Better call Sergeant Matheson, have him send his homicide experts up here, as well as the cop to stand guard. Well, you probably want you all to go down to headquarters for a talk.
I see.
Murder has to be treated very differently from suicide.
Yeah. Well, there's the library right ahead of you. You'll find the phone in there.
Thanks.
This is apartment 4, Patsy, right here.
Uh-huh.
Yes. What is it, please?
Is Mr. Carter here?
Mr. Carter?
Yes, Mr. Nick Carter, the detective.
You must have the wrong number, miss. What number were you looking for?
Look, is this 717 West Hampton Street, or isn't it?
That's correct, sir.
And is this apartment 4, or isn't it?
That's quite right, sir.
Okay, then where's Nick Carter?
I'm very sorry, sir, but there must be some mistake. Mr. Anthony Miller lives here. There's no Mr. Carter.
Well, didn't a man kill himself here last night?
Oh, my goodness, no, miss. You're all mixed up. Well,
Mr. Scubby, did Sergeant Matheson tell you the name of the dead man?
No, said whoever phoned didn't give it to him. Oh, we must have the address wrong, Patsy.
Maybe. Could we use your phone?
Why, of course, miss, if you'll step into the living room. There, to your left. There's a phone in there.
Ah, thanks. Come on, Scubby. Okay. You can give the sergeant a buzz and see what's wrong.
Right there, sir, on the desk.
Right on. Thanks.
If you'll pardon me for a moment, please.
Well, sure, go ahead.
Police headquarters.
Let me speak to Sergeant Matheson.
One moment, please.
Oh, I wonder how it would be to live in a place.
Homicide, Sergeant Matheson.
Oh, Maddie, this is Scubby.
Yeah, what's on your mind, Scubby?
Oh, Nick must have given us the wrong address when he told us to follow him uptown to this suicide place. What is the address?
Just a minute. Here it is. It's 717 West Hampton Street, apartment 4.
But that's where we are, Maddie. They don't know anything about it here.
What's that?
No, the butler tells us there's been no suicide here.
What? Hey, that's the address they gave us this morning when they phoned.
Well, have you heard from Nick or the medical examiner?
Hey, come to think of it, I have it. And that's a funny thing, too. It's over 2 hours since they left here. They ought to be back by now. Hey, why didn't they call and say they got the wrong address? There's something mighty funny going on, Scubby.
Yeah, looks like it. Well, we'll see what we can find. Maybe it's an address that sounds like this one. We'll call you in a little while if we don't find anything.
Okay, I'll tell the boys to watch out for Nick and Doc.
Right, so long.
You know any more than we do?
No. He hasn't heard from Nick or the Doc since they left headquarters about 2 hours ago. What are you looking at?
I was just thinking. Whoever lives here has pretty poor taste, even if they do have money.
How do you mean?
Well, look at the rug in this room.
Yeah?
It's the wrong color. It's definitely too small for the size of the floor. And the rug in the next room, which must be the dining room, was entirely the wrong color for the decorative effect in that room. And that one's much too big for the size of the floor.
Yeah, you're right, Patsy.
It's funny that people who live in such swell places should furnish their rooms so badly.
Yeah.
It almost looks as if these two rugs have been switched around, doesn't it?
Patsy, maybe that's just what did happen. Maybe... Here, let me get a look at the rug under that dining table.
Uh-huh.
I'll shove the table over to one side and have a good look.
Okay.
Are you looking for something, sir?
You're darn right I'm looking for something. You better hope I don't find it.
I have to ask you to stop moving that dining table.
If you try to stop me, I'll put a gun between your ribs.
I'll call the police.
Go ahead, call them if you dare. There.
Scubby, look, right in the center of the rug, a big blood stain.
That's what I thought. And I'll bet my last dollar that you'll find a blood stain that same size and shape in the center of the living room floor.
Then someone was killed here.
Yes, Patsy. And Nick and the doctor were here, too. This whole business about there being no killing here is a frame-up. Now you talk, and talk fast. What have you done with Nick Carter?
Every man in every squad car is to be on the lookout for him. Now repeat that description I gave you. Right. Right. No. It's Gerald Warner. Yeah, he was the old man's nephew. Okay, let me know as soon as you hear anything. Now, Jordan, look here. You're in a pretty tight spot. If you don't want this murder rap pinned on you, you better talk and you better say plenty.
But I tell you, I know nothing about it.
And you still say you don't know where the old man's niece went either, huh?
Miss Hammond, no, sir. She put on her hat and coat and went out carrying a small overnight bag.
Where'd she go?
I don't know, sir.
Ah, look, don't be a sap. The butler always knows everything about a killing. And most of the time, the butler done the murder himself.
But I assure you,
now, look,
sir,
we've proved that the bloodstained Scubby and Patsy found was human blood. We found Nick Carter's fingerprints on the desk, the table, and the upstairs phone. We found the old man's body stuffed in that upstairs closet in your apartment. And you don't know nothing about nothing.
Well, Sergeant, here's the bullet they just took out of Miller's body.
Let me see it.
Well, that's an ordinary .32 caliber slug.
Yeah, but it was big enough to kill him.
I know that. What I mean was...
Detective squad is back from searching Gerald Warner's apartment.
Oh, yeah? They find anything?
Nothing very valuable. Oh, they did find a telephone number for the niece, Frances Hammond.
Uh-oh.
There were two numbers in Warner's small directory. One was her home, and the other, according to the chief operator, is at 62 East Pine Street.
Now, what the deuce would that be?
Well, maybe she's got a girlfriend there.
That's it, Scubby. Patsy, this is a job for you.
Uh-huh.
Go to this address and see if Frances Hammond is there. If she is, tell her you're a reporter. Find out how much she knows. Get as much of the story out of her as you can.
And if she's not there?
All right, maybe you can find out where she is. But go on, get going and hurry.
Right.
Maybe you can dig up something that'll tell us where Nick is.
Did it. We'll find out.
Where's Nick? Where's Nick?
I ain't telling.
Stay tuned.
I ain't telling.
We decided not to play the second half of our show. Just to tick you off.
Yeah.
And make you worry about Nick Carter.
See, if they found the blood underneath the rug, then why didn't they start pulling up floorboards?
There you go with that logic again. Stop with the coffee.
I know.
Stop with the coffee there.
Stop with the coffee. Actually, the cup is empty. It's time to go wander into the kitchen and get some more coffee over there.
I may join you on that happy notion, except I want to find out what happened to Nick. Maybe Nick did it.
Ooh.
Nick Carter, Master Detective, turns bad.
When good detectives go bad, yes. No.
Mm-hmm.
When good coffee beans are on the wrong side of the track.
That's right. As we continue with Nick Carter, Master Detective. Peace! Of the disappearing corpse.
Any idea where we are, Doc?
No. Looks sort of like somebody's hunting shack.
Yes, I can see that. That doesn't help much.
Well, as long as we're tied up to these two chairs like we are, it doesn't make much difference what part of the world we're in. We're no good to anybody this way.
Oh, the thing that makes me maddest is the way they fooled me so completely. I never did see who hit me.
Well, considering that there were only two men in the place and that the butler was with me, it isn't very hard to figure out who tapped you for the count.
I was out cold from the time I was knocked out until I came to in this place. My wrists were so relaxed when they tied me that I can't work them loose.
No, to think I got into this mess because I was bored.
Well, I don't understand how you found out where I was staying, Miss Bowen. Your cousin told me, Miss Hammond, but it was he who suggested that I come here. He knew reporters would be pestering me for interviews after Uncle Anthony killed himself. And he said if I came here, they wouldn't be able to find me. He promised me he wouldn't tell anyone. But he only gave me your address because he knew I wouldn't pester you. He and I have been friends for years. Oh, I hope he doesn't tell anyone else. I'm sure he won't. And now, may I ask you a question or two? Suppose so. I really don't feel much like talking about it. I know, Miss Hammond. You loved your uncle, didn't you? Very much. He was always so good to me. Were you and your cousin engaged? Well, not quite. Uncle wanted us to get married. In fact, he made a will leaving me all his money because, well, he thought that would keep Gerald more interested in me. Was Gerald, Mr. Warner, interested in anyone else? Oh, no, it wasn't that. Uncle Anthony knew that Gerald wasn't ready to settle down yet. He was trying to persuade him it would be the best thing for him. Do you know where your cousin is now? No, I don't. Why do you ask me where he is? Don't you know? Well, you see, he asked me to send him a copy of whatever I wrote in my interview with you. But he's left town and he didn't leave me his address. Can you tell me? Why, I don't know. When he wants to get out of town, he generally goes to Atlantic City, the Hotel Martise. Or to his hunting shack up in Norris County. Might be in either place, I suppose.
Uh-huh. Well, I'll send a copy of the interview to each of these addresses. One of them ought to reach him. Tell me, Miss Hammond, did you know where your uncle kept his pistol?
Why, of course. We all knew it. It was no secret. I've seen it often. I never thought he'd use it to do this.
Oh, there now, Miss Hammond. I'm sorry I mentioned it. Oh, please don't let it upset you. I'll just run along now. Goodbye. And thanks.
Trying to get across the room by moving your chair like this when you're tied up in it this way isn't the simplest thing in the world.
And I can't make my chair move at all. But you're doing fine.
Am I getting anywhere near that table yet?
You're doing great, Nick. Just a little more.
I'm moving backwards this way. It's hard to tell where I'm going.
To your left. Just a hair. That's it. Now you got it.
So far, so good. Now, just where's the bottle, Doc? With my back to it this way, I can't see where it is.
It's almost directly in back of you, about a foot from the edge of the table.
All right. I'll pull the tablecloth toward me, and that'll bring the bottle near the edge where I can get hold of it. Watch it while I pull it now. Is it coming, Doc?
Careful now. It's almost there. Hold it. It's right at the edge. You ought to be able to get it now.
Well, I can if I can get my hands up that high. Whoever tied my arms and back of this chair did too good a job. There's no slack at all.
That's it. There.
I got it. Now, if I can break this bottle against the fireplace, I should have a sharp edge that'll cut these ropes in short order. But when you can only move an inch at a time this way, it's slow work getting anywhere. Keep me going in the right direction, Doc.
Well, you're doing fine, Nick. Only a little more now. To your left a bit. That's it. You ought to be able to reach it now.
I'll try it. Easy first.
You can hit it all right.
Yeah. All right, here goes, Doc.
You did it, Nick. Now edge your chair over toward me. You can cut my ropes first, then I'll cut yours. Gosh, Nick. You're the eighth wonder of the world.
Thanks, Doc. Well, look out. Here I come.
Homicide, Sergeant Matheson.
Oh, yeah, Chief.
You say Gerald Warner isn't at the Hotel Martise and hasn't been there for several months, huh? Okay, thanks very much, Chief. Yeah, that's what we wanted to know. We know where to look for him now. Yeah, thanks. So long.
Well, that wasn't so bad, Nick. But it took longer to cut through the ropes of that piece of glass than I thought it would.
Well, we're free, and that's the main thing.
Have you found anything around the shack here that looks like a clue?
I'm not sure, Doc, but I rather think so. I found these two pistols in the back of one of the cupboards. They're very unusual pair of guns.
Uh-huh. Here.
This gun has one empty shell in it. The barrel is clean. Has not been fired.
Well, that's the gun that was in the old man's hand when we found him, isn't it?
I'm pretty sure it is. Now, look at this other gun.
Uh-huh.
This one has no empty shells in it. The barrel is dirty, and from the smell of it, has been fired very recently.
I see what you mean. Say, that does make them a little queer, doesn't it?
Well, Doc, as I see it, Warner killed Miller with his own gun. Then he tried to make it look like suicide, but he couldn't leave his own gun there. So he got his uncle's gun, which hadn't been fired, took the empty shell out of his gun and exchanged it for a full shell from his uncle's gun and put that gun in his uncle's hand.
And he was just excited enough not to realize that the barrel of his uncle's gun was still clean.
Of course.
But, well, why didn't he fire the other gun instead of going through all that rigmarole about changing the empty shell for the full one?
Probably afraid that a second shot would wake up somebody who might have been partly aroused by the first shot, the one that killed his uncle.
Well, I have to admit that it makes sense the way you tell it. And you still think that it'll pay us to wait here for somebody to show up?
Yes, Doc, I do. Because if anyone was planning to get rid of us, they'd have done it tonight. And they'd have to do it tonight. They wouldn't dare wait until tomorrow. Someone might find us in the meantime. So if we wait, someone is sure to show up.
Okay, you're the doctor. As far as catching murderers goes, you say wait, we wait. Huh. You're right, Nick. There's somebody now.
Now, remember, sit in your chair with your back to the door. Hold the ropes as if you were still tied up and unconscious.
Like this?
Let your head drop on your chest more.
Right.
Now, that's swell, Doc. Mm. Now, you look as if you were dead to the world. I'll do the same. Quiet. Here they are.
Oh, what do you know? It's still out cold. I must have given him a stiffer dose than I thought I did.
It won't hurt him. Makes it easier for us.
Yeah, you're quite right, Mike.
What are we going to do next, Warner?
I still think our best plan is to dump them in the old quarry. It's close by and it's full of water. We'll wait the bodies. They'll never be found.
That's an awful lot of killing just to get hold of an old will.
Not at all, Mike. If I could have taken the will without killing anyone, I would have been glad to do it that way. But since I couldn't, I'm not going to worry about it. And it's worth every bit of my trouble, believe me. The will I destroyed left everything to my cousin. Now that that's out of the way, I am the old man's only living relative. Sole heir to everything he owns. And that's plenty.
What about that niece of his, your cousin?
Ah, but she's not really his niece. She's just a girl he sort of unofficially adopted. He always planned to adopt her legally, but he... well, never got around to it, so... she gets nothing.
You gonna marry her?
Marry her? Mm. Oh, no, indeed, Mike. She's not my type at all. I just kidded around with her to keep in right with the old man. But that's all over now.
Well, I hope it works out like you wanted to.
Well, I've certainly had bad breaks so far. First, the old man catches me at the safe. Then headquarters sends up Nick Carter instead of a regular cop. Then with a butler and the plan that I had the apartment all fixed up so you'd never know there'd been a killing, Carter's two assistants show up. And the girl notices the rugs have been switched. That tips off the whole frame-up.
Your troubles are over now.
They will be as soon as we get rid of these two middlers.
Yeah, better do it pretty quick now.
Take it easy just as soon as it gets a little darker, Mike.
Hey, you got any old burlap bags we can put them in?
Yeah, there's some out back. I'll show you where they are.
Okay, better have them ready when we want them.
How's our chance, Doc? Come on. Let me have one of those shotguns we loaded before.
Here you are, Nick.
Thanks. Now you take the other one. Get behind the cupboard there. I'll hide over here.
Right, Nick. You say when.
Let me do the talking. Quiet now.
Mike, look, they're gone.
That ain't possible. I just...
Get your hands up high, both of you.
Carter, how did you...
We'll talk about that later. All right, Doc. I'll load the gun on them while you tie their hands. And tie them tight, the way they tied ours.
It'll be a pleasure, Nick. A positive pleasure.
Oh, wait till I tie them.
Well, Mr. Warner, this isn't coming out just the way you planned it, is it?
You've got no proof against me, Carter.
You're wrong, Warner. When you knocked me out in your uncle's apartment, you proved you killed him.
Tell that to a jury and see how far you get.
Oh, that's not legal evidence, it's true. But I have some other evidence that is legal.
What?
Warner, between the time Doc and I got free and the time you and Mike got here, we searched this shack of yours. And hidden in one of the cupboards, we found these two guns.
Well, so you found two guns in a hunting shack. That's really remarkable.
One of these guns is the one that was in your uncle's hand when I first saw his body. The other one, I feel sure, is the one that actually killed him. And if I'm not mistaken, it'll be registered in your name, have your fingerprints on it, and will fire a bullet that'll match the bullet that killed your uncle. Would you call those things legal proof?
All right. Yes, that's the gun I killed him with. You know, Carter, I should have killed you when I had the chance.
Yes, it would have been wiser than to...
Nick, are you there? Nick!
Come in, Patsy.
Oh.
What's all the excitement?
Oh, Nick, I've been so afraid.
Afraid of what?
Afraid for you.
Patsy, you should know me better than that. Say, how did you get down here anyway?
Well, when Sergeant Matheson got word from Atlantic City that Warner wasn't there, why, I made Scubby drive me down here as fast as he could.
Yeah, she wouldn't let me stop and park anywhere. I never have any luck when I'm out with her.
Well, you got here just in time to drive back with us. I was just going to take Mr. Warner and his friend here back to town to meet Maddie.
Oh, gosh, Nick. After that thug tried to tell me that you'd never been in the apartment we knew you had, why... oh, I was ready for anything.
But she got even with him.
I sure did. He thought I wouldn't notice if they'd switch the rugs around, but I did. That'll teach him.
Yes, Patsy. This is one time when a woman's instinct for interior decoration really solved a murder. Well,
Nick, how about a glimpse into next week's story of intrigue and adventure?
You used the right word that time, Ken. Because next week I'm going to tell you a story in which intrigue is the keynote. A man in the death house with only 9 hours to live asked me to prove him innocent of the charge in which he'd been convicted. He claimed he was the victim of a frame-up.
And when Nick really got into the case, he found that the whole thing was a frame-up, but not quite the way we expected.
You mean you investigated the case and found a solution in only 9 hours?
That's right, Ken. They were a very busy 9 hours, and a man's life hung in the balance.
What do you call your story, Nick?
I call it 9 Hours to Live.
Master Detective, which is produced and directed by Jock McGregor, is copyrighted by Street & Smith Publications, Incorporated. Pictured stories of Nick Carter appear in every issue of the Shadow Comics. In The Adventures of Nick Carter, Master Detective, Lon Clark is starred as Nick. Charlotte Manson is featured as Patsy. Matty is played by Ed Latimer. Scubby by John Kane. Original music is played by George Wright. Script is by Jock McGregor. Any resemblance in these programs to actual persons living or dead or to actual places is purely coincidental. Nick Carter, Master Detective, is presented over most of these stations each week at this same time. This is Ken Powell saying so long until next week.
Did I say that one character's name is Scuzzy?
This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
No, it
seriously,
isn't.
Seriously, the one guy's name was Scuzzy?
Scuzzy. My name's Scuzzy.
You got a problem with that? You making fun of Scuzzy?
Yes.
A close personal friend of mine, Scuzzy?
Scuzzy Dirtnap, yeah.
Hey, yes, he hangs around the railroad tracks.
Yeah, good old Scuzzy Dirtnap.
So that was a good story. Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Yay!
Despite how it sounds, a corpus delicti has nothing to do with taste.
That's an opinion.
You knife and fork your way through that one.
I think Hannibal Lecter could argue differently.
I bet he could. Those Java lava beans.
All right. That's our first disappearing story of the disappearing corpse, which Nick Carter, Master Detective, has called.
Snorps.
Yep. That too.
Yep.
How's the coffee going? You on cup number 3 yet?
No, cup seven.
It's on a drip. You'll be up till a week from Thursday, man.
Yeah.
That is a frightening thought right there.
Yeah, buddy. Anybody, buddy.
Terrifying.
Been
a little while since we've had the haunting hour here on Erie House Radio.
Yeah, the haunting half hour, which... that's not the haunting hour, it's the haunting half hour. Unless they were referencing the haunting hour being midnight, except that it wasn't midnight either. So they lied either way. You know, what is it about lying? It bothers me.
Lions enjoy it. You know, I mean, nothing better than a lion. So the haunting hour and the witching. What was the rest? Witching tale?
Witch's tale.
Yeah. There was something that it never aired when you would think it would, which would be like around midnight.
Yeah.
But, wait. Back in the 40s, did radio go off air?
It depended on your channel, yeah. Yeah, it could.
Oh, okay. Some
I
did.
Mean, even in the even in the early 70s, we had a station here in Akron that went off the air at sunset and came back on at sunrise the next morning.
Oy gavol.
I think all those stations are pretty much either gone or on full time now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think some of that had to do with the Clear Channel stations, because Clear Channel station, a 50,000 watt Clear Channel AM station, was supposed to be able to be heard pretty much throughout the United States.
Mm-hmm. Some of them are pretty darn strong. Some of them are pretty darn strong.
Some of them are, yeah. I've listened to Cincinnati before on my dad's big radio. I've listened to New Orleans on my dad's big old radio. So, yeah.
Nice.
It is.
Hey,
well,
it
during
might
the
be
day.
Necessary to get a shortwave radio soon, folks. But,
yeah.
During the day, our radio signals way back when, were they fighting against the solar radiation of the sun?
I think it was more a matter
change.
Of wavelength and weather conditions.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, there were some stations that were only authorized by the FCC to essentially operate from sunrise to sunset.
Oh.
It had nothing to do with Fiddler on the Roof either, you know?
Oh, okay. I thought maybe there were religious implications, possibly.
Well, could be. It depends on the format of the station, I guess.
That's true. And the ownership.
And the ownership, yes.
Yep.
Yeah, you had all that going on.
It's all good. It's all good.
It's all good. It's all good.
If you have good content, they come back. And you guys come back anyway.
Yep.
Thank you
hour.
So much. Linda Lou, Fonz yeah. Bain, Funeral DM, GGSI Paper, good old Bob, Rob Smith Jr., and a cast of thousands. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, an interesting thing about the Haunting Hour, of course, it was syndicated by NBC. It was made for syndication by NBC. Syndicated programs could actually make more for the distributor and the owner of the program than regular network shows, because they could charge everybody, and they would be charged different amounts for different stations and your different listenership. But one of the things that stands out here, and you'll find at the end, is they don't really give the credits. Well, I think the flip side of the record was the intro and outro, and on there they gave room for a local announcer to give the cast members and such, the local sponsor and the local and the cast are in the cast and that got lost throughout time, so all we have is the actual program part.
Yeah. But it's a good thing we have them saved as they were. Our episode of Haunting Hour is called Case of the Lonesome Corpse. Oh, how sad. That's why I like serial killers.
They're
no corpse
about,
should be alone.
They talking about my ex again? Wow.
Lonesome corpse. Oh my gosh, that's funny.
Are you lonesome? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that was fun. That was fun. We'll have to play that again.
Fun.
We'll have to play it again sometime. That was a lot of
Maybe
fun.
We will right after this episode. We seem to be doing
good
on time
do
here. We're doing pretty good on time. Let's begin with Case of the Lonesome Corpse. Originally broadcast or created.
According to six people in Nevada, June 14th, 1945.
No. No, stay where you are. Do not break the stillness of this moment. For this is a time of mystery, a time when imagination is free and moves forward swiftly, silently. This is the Haunting Hour.
Remember Hugo Carteret? Why, of course you do. The brilliant criminologist and charming gentleman who had such a wonderful flair for solving crimes, which carried a hint of the macabre, and savored of the supernatural. He died back in the 20s, and they say that everybody from the 400 of Park Avenue to the 400,000 of the Bowery and Hell's Kitchen came to his funeral. Anyway, Hugo Carteret left his memoirs, and the very first chapter deals with an infamous crime, which in June of the year 1922 threw all of New York City into an uproar of horror. Such was the case of the Lonesome Corpse. Greystone Park used to be the private estate of old Caleb Greystone, eccentric recluse and, incidentally, millionaire many times over. When Caleb died, he willed the estate to the city of New York. The city fathers, properly grateful, promptly converted the estate into a park. It was public in that it was open to the public, but it had a private look because a 15-foot wall of polished stone completely surrounded it. One day, back in June of 22, a big car drove up to the only entrance. In the back seat of the limousine was William Marsden, wealthy lawyer and executor of the Greystone Estate, and he had come to inspect the ground.
You wait here in the car, Edward.
Yes, Mr. Marsden. Will you be long, sir?
I don't think that's any of your business. I pay you to chauffeur me around, not to ask me questions.
Yes, I was only bringing up the fact that it's getting dark, and you said you had to be at the plaza by 9.
I'm perfectly able to take care of my own business, Edward. I'll mind mine, and you mind yours. You wait here in the car till I'm through in the park. Understand?
Yes, Mr. Marsden.
Suppose that big shot lawyer Marston disappeared. Think his chauffeur had something to do with it?
I don't know, Tom.
I don't get it. He tells his chauffeur to wait, walks into this here park, and never comes out. Chauffeur hears a scream inside the park, and that's all.
You're scared too easy, Tom. Nine, that's nice. Just broke my shovel. Well, I have to go over to the tool house and get another one.
But, Joe, the tool house is way over the other end of the park.
So what?
It's getting dark. It ain't healthy to be in this place after dark. Let's knock off, Joe. We can finish digging these flower beds tomorrow.
If we knock off, we'll both be looking for a new gardener job tomorrow. Andrew, the superintendent, told us to finish up tonight, and that's what we got to do.
Look, Joe, don't leave me. I got an idea there's something running around this park we don't know nothing about. When I think of that lawyer Marsden, I...
So, you're seeing ghosts now, huh, Tom? Well, there ain't no ghost or nothing else that can scare Joe Donetti. You wait for me here. If you see a boogeyman, why, just offer him a drink and ask him to stick around, eh?
Headquarters, Sergeant Hogan speaking. What? You saw a light floating around in Greystone Park? What kind of a light? Purple, eh? You see anything else? What? A white ghost walking down the park road, eh? All right, don't get excited. We'll send a squad car to investigate right away.
Hello, Sergeant Hogan.
Oh, hello, Mr. Carteret. Miss Smith.
Oh, I see you know my special assistant.
Of course he does, Hugo. The sergeant and I are old friends. We met at the policeman's ball.
Keeping you busy these days, Sergeant?
Busy?
Mr. Carteret, we sure need your help in this case. The commissioner's going nuts inside. And you ought to hear the double talk coming in over this wire. This Greystone Park business has got the people living around there walking around in circles. They're seeing everything from the King of the Pixies to the ghost of my great-grandmother.
I don't wonder. I've been working up a few shivers about it myself.
Is Commissioner Williams in, Sergeant?
Yeah. Go right into his office, Mr. Carteret. He's expecting you.
Thank you. Here comes another screwball report.
Come on, Ann.
Police headquarters. Sergeant Hogan speaking. What? You heard some kind of animal howling in Greystone Park? What kind of animal?
So Joe Donnelly left you to get a new shovel, eh, Farrell? And then a little later, you heard a scream.
Yes, sir. It come from far off, and it must have been Joe.
Oh, hello, Hugo. Miss Smith?
Commissioner?
Well, I guess that'll be all, Farrell. Stay pretty close to home, though. We may need you later.
Yes, sir.
Oh, that was Tom Farrell, the gardener. Hard to get anything out of him. He's so jittery. He's convinced there's some kind of murdering thing running around loose in that park. So is Mars and Chauffeur. And I'm convinced they're both telling straight stories.
I trust you searched the park thoroughly, Commissioner.
Oh, of course I have, Hugo. Had a detail practically scrape every foot of the area with a fine-tooth comb.
And you found nothing, Commissioner Williams?
Nothing. Until yesterday morning.
Oh, you have a clue?
Yes, if you want to call it that, Hugo. But, well, it's almost incredible. Fantastic on the face of it. Hugo, we need your help badly. We're at our wits' ends down here, and I haven't even asked.
Well, naturally, Commissioner, I'd be delighted. There's a touch of the macabre and supernatural here that I find very interesting. Don't you, Ann?
I'm not so sure.
Now then, Commissioner, you said something about a clue.
Yes. Donetti, the missing gardener, was wearing hobnail shoes. The road was soft from the recent rain, and we were able to trace his footsteps as far as they went.
What do you mean, as far as they went?
I mean those footprints stopped dead in the middle of the road.
What?
Right next to Caleb Greystone's tomb in the center of the park. It was just as though some giant bird of prey picked Donetti up and carried him off.
But, my dear Williams, that doesn't make sense.
I know it doesn't, but it happened.
Donetti couldn't vanish like that unless he had wings.
Maybe he does have wings now.
You know, Anne, I can't get those footprints out of my mind. They interest me.
They scare me.
In fact, I think I'll stop in at Greystone Park and have a look at them.
You mean now?
Yes.
Oh, but Hugo, it's midnight, and there's something dangerous roaming around in that park. Something deadly. Why not wait until tomorrow in the daylight?
Because the things that happen in Greystone Park, Anne, seem to happen at night.
Serene Greystone Park. The place that people just hate to leave.
You should have let me drop you at your apartment, Anne. This is no place for a girl.
Oh, no, Mr. Carteret. I'm going right with you.
Well, here's the gate. It's the only entrance or exit. Let's try it. Yeah. Neatly locked with a heavy iron chain and padlock.
The police want to keep people out, and I think it's a wonderful idea.
Either that or they want to keep something in.
The thing in this park couldn't be stopped by chains or padlocks.
Well, they're not going to stop us either. Here, Anne, I'll boost you up to the top of this stone wall and climb up myself. Come on. There you are. How's the view up there?
Oh, lovely.
Now then, Mr. Carteret, let's see what kind of a second-story man you are.
I haven't done this since I was a boy.
This wall is higher than it looks. You all right, Anne?
Just dandy.
Well, now, I'll drop down and then catch you. All right, Anne. Just let yourself go.
All right, but don't miss.
There you are.
Shh, listen. What was that?
Only the wind.
Why, I thought I heard someone calling.
Why, Anne, you're trembling.
You're telling me. Hugo, where are we going?
Up this road until we reach the place where that missing gardener's footprints stopped.
Right next to that big square tomb in the center of the park, according to Commissioner Williams.
Mm-hmm. That's the Greystone Mausoleum. All that remains of old Caleb Greystone, the philanthropist, lies within it. And that's the statue of old Caleb himself standing on the roof of the tomb.
Oh, how nice. I hope you realize that William Marsden and Joe Donetti walked along this same road at night, and they did...
What's wrong?
I felt a cold hand on my face.
That isn't a hand. It's a leaf on the end of a twig. Poor kid. You're frightened, aren't you?
Who, me? I'm scared to death. I'm so scared my hair's standing on end. It's ruined my permanence. Oh, Hugo.
What is it, Anne?
That statue on the top of the mausoleum. The statue of Caleb Greystone.
Well, what about it?
It moved.
What? Now, wait a minute, Anne.
Hugo, I tell you, it moved. I saw it lift one of its arms and turn its head in the moonlight.
Now, Anne, it's just that you're on edge. What you saw was a mirage brewed out of moonlight and your own imagination. That statue's made of stone. Stone statues don't move. Come on, we leave the road and go down this hollow. Well, here we are. Here's the tomb. And here's Donetti's footprints, just as the commissioner said. They're pretty faint, but... Wait a minute.
What is it, Hugo?
Look up at that statue of Caleb Greystone. Up there on the mausoleum roof.
What about it?
Well, when we saw it on the other side of the hollow, it faced toward the road, didn't it?
Why, yes.
Now it's facing away from the road.
Then it did move, Hugo. It did move.
More than that, Anne. While we lost sight of it down in that hollow, it turned completely around.
Ooh, very scary and creepy, too.
Thank you, Mr. Organist.
Mm-hmm.
You need to smile when you say that.
That's right, because Gar is a fan of the organ music of...
Who doesn't like a good
radio.
Hammond?
Yep.
That's right. Gar loves his organs. Gar loves his organs.
Yes.
Except those that are affected by his coffee. But other than that, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, those organs he's punishing.
take that, he says. Take that.
Take that.
And another, and another.
Do you guys I know we had parks. Let's see. Yeah, there were a couple parks where when I was growing up, we had parks. And after sunset, you didn't really hang out in the parks.
It's because we were smart when we were kids.
Yeah, and we had parents that would, yeah. Once street lights go on, you better be at the house.
That's right. When the street light goes on, you better be home.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're not getting in.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, many of the times I heard my mother calling my name at the top of her lungs out the back door.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. We weren't allowed to get to that point. If you heard your name, forget it. They had called out, you know, somebody with a rifle is just going to take you out. That wasn't it.
Yeah.
You weren't getting doing
the rifle. I didn't even have it that bad. Jeez. At least they used a handgun in my case. God.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a thing about being extreme here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was right, you know.
Well, there was something about New York. New York Central Park was not a place to be at in what the 70s and the 80s. You didn't go there at night. I think maybe it's gotten
better.
There were, I don't know.
There were places you did not go.
You did not go. Yeah.
Well, if you did, you might not come back so much.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, the good old days. All right, so this is a good story with a little dark side to it, Dave, that you picked for Eerie House Radio.
Well, it is the haunting half hour, you know.
Yeah.
Indeed it is, and haunting half hour. The haunting 15 minutes and 27 seconds.
Right.
Let's wrap it up then, shall we, with part two of Case of the lonesome and sad yet delightful corpse.
The strange phenomenon of the restless statue intrigued Hugo Carter at no end. Like a hound after his quarry, he scrambled to the roof of the mausoleum and made a thorough examination of both the statue and the roof in the moonlight. He reported his findings to Police Commissioner Williams, and the next morning, in the light of day, they revisited the scene.
You two up there had better be careful. That roof's slippery.
Oh, we'll be all right, Ann. Here, Commissioner. Watch what happens when I grasp this statue.
Yeah, interesting, Hugo. It turns loosely on that upright bar.
Yes, and I've no doubt that old Caleb Greystone is turning down below in his tomb at this sacrilege we're committing on his image. You know what, Commissioner?
What?
This statue isn't marble through and through. It's merely a marble surface on a light aluminum base. A man could lift it right off this support and walk off with it over his shoulder.
Yes, yes, he could. Not that it proves anything. But these scratches on this polished stone roof, man, almost looks as though they led to the door of the crypt on the other end of the roof.
It's hard to tell. I tried the door of the crypt last night. It was locked. Well, it's still locked.
Hey, it's a massive tomb. Big enough to take care of 20 dead millionaires.
Yes, you'd think old Caleb Greystone would be pretty lonely down there.
And his condition would be lonely anywhere. Well, Hugo, where do we go from here?
Let's have a talk with the park superintendent, Commissioner. His office is over there on the left. Maybe he'll be able to throw a little light on the proceedings. As the old saying goes, you never can tell.
Well, Mr. Andrews, this is Hugo Carteret, the criminologist, and his special assistant, Miss Smith.
How do you do?
Oh, yes, I've heard of you. How do you do?
As superintendent of the Greystone Park, Mr. Andrews, we thought you might give us a little information on that tomb.
Always glad to help the police, Commissioner Williams.
Thank you. Now then, has that statue of Caleb Greystone always faced the road?
Why, yes, as far as I know.
It doesn't now, Mr. Andrews. You can see for yourself through the window.
Why, bless my soul, you're right, Mr. Carter. Now, how do you suppose that happened?
That's what we hope to find out.
Interesting idea to build a statue of yourself and put it on your own mausoleum.
Mr. Greystone had it made in memory of himself as a reminder to the public that he had converted his private estate into a park for their benefit.
Mm-hmm. Somewhat of an egotist, huh?
And from what the newspaper files say, eccentric. They practically accused old Caleb of dealing in black magic and selling his soul to the devil.
Well, I understand the whole family was rather peculiar, Mr. Andrews.
Well, yes, I suppose it's true. There were all sorts of rumors. Old Caleb was the eldest son, and he hated the rest of his family. Cheated them out of the family fortune, they say. It's said that he drove his own brother Arthur into poverty.
Yes, yes, I remember the case. Arthur Greystone disappeared. Bureau of Missing Persons never did locate him.
Mr. Andrews, that mausoleum out there is a pretty massive affair. Is old Caleb the only one buried there?
Yes. As I said, he hated the rest of the family. He specified in his will that only he was to be buried there.
That wasn't very hospitable of him.
So old Caleb has that whole place all to himself, huh?
What are you getting at, Hugo?
Yes, that's what I'd like to know, too.
Oh, nothing. Nothing at all. It's just that these cases of abnormal psychology interest me. Yes, Commissioner, they interest me no end. Come in. Oh, hello, Anne.
Hello, Hugo. Relaxing at the piano, I see.
Yes. Would you like me to stop?
No, I like that melody you're playing.
So do I. You know, music brings a certain clarity to the jumbled mind. It resolves things. It's a mental lullaby. Where have you been, Ann?
Down at police headquarters. Poor Commissioner Williams.
Why poor Commissioner Williams?
Every newspaper in town is clamoring either for a solution to this Greystone Park mystery or a new police commissioner.
Yes, I know. It's a pity. You know, Ann, Frank Williams is not only a gentleman, he's our friend. I think the time has come for us to try and crack this case.
The time has come, all right, but how?
Well,
We've seen the outside of Caleb Greystone's tomb. It might be interesting to have a look at the inside.
The inside?
Yes. I've got an idea that's where our solution lies.
But how are you going to get in? That door of the crypt on the roof is locked tight.
Well, Anne, if I may boast a little, I have a certain skill with burglar tools.
Yes, I know, but you can't go there in broad daylight and burglarize somebody's mausoleum.
I don't propose to go there in broad daylight.
You mean we're going tonight?
I mean I'm going tonight. I'm taking you home right after dinner.
Oh, no, you don't. You need someone to hold your flashlight. And besides, I'm just mad about mausoleum. Oh, it's a lovely evening. Outside of this storm, it's just as black as...
Oh, look out, Anne. The stone roof is slippery. Careful now. The door of the crypt is right over here. Now, keep your flashlight trained right on this lock. But wait a minute. How did that happen?
How did what happen?
Why, the door of the crypt is unlocked.
Unlocked?
Yes. Somebody's been here ahead of us.
Oh, dear. It's awfully dark down there. What are we going to do now?
We're going inside.
But... there may be someone in there.
But I'll find out. You wait out here.
Oh, no, Hugo Carteret. I'm not going to stand out here alone. I'm going in with you.
Have it your own way. We'll take this hammer with us. It may come in handy. Careful now. There are stairs leading down into the crypt. You stay close to me.
Hugo, I'm practically hugging you to death right now. Oh, it's cold in here.
Well, it's dry at any rate.
It's dark as pitch. I can't see a thing.
Here, Anne, you take the hammer. Let me have the flashlight. Now, let's have a look.
Oh, Hugo, look. There are two men lying there on the floor. They must be...
Yes. The two men who disappeared in Greystone Park. William Marsden and Joe Donnetti.
Are they?
Yes, I'm afraid they are. Oh, poor devils. Nobody would think of looking for them in here.
How... how were they killed?
They've got deep red marks around their throats. Typical of some kind of strangling cord.
Oh, it's horrible. Why were they brought here? Why would anybody want to do a thing like this?
The motive, Anne, like everything else in this tragic case, was abnormal. I'm beginning to see now why. Anne, listen.
Footsteps on the roof. Someone's up there.
Yes.
By the crypt door. Hugo, do you think it's the restless statue?
Perhaps. I do know it's the killer. Annie's coming down the steps. Put out that flashlight and flatten yourself against the wall.
Good evening. Oh, come now. I know you're in here. I can see in the dark better than you think. I have eyes like a cat. I saw you coming through the trees. I left the crypt door open for you. You walked right in, you fool. You walked right in.
Who are you?
Why, my name is Arthur Greystone. This is the Greystone tomb. I live here with my friend.
So you killed these two men?
Yes, it was lonesome here. I wanted my brother Caleb over there in the casket to have company. He wanted to sleep alone in this big, beautiful mausoleum. It was so selfish of him, so selfish. But now he has two others to sleep with him. And soon he'll have four.
You took the statue of your brother off the supporting rod, didn't you, Arthur? It was light enough to carry. You hid it here in the tomb and posed as your brother's statue. In the dark, your victims couldn't see that the statue was alive. You dropped a cord around their necks as they passed below.
You're very clever, my friend. No, I wouldn't move if I were you. I have the strangling cord here in my hand, and I'm very good at using it.
Why did you do all this?
My brother Caleb cheated me in life, drove me into poverty. Then he tried to cheat me even in death. He built this tomb and willed that only he would sleep here.
This is your idea of revenge, filling his tomb with sleeping companions.
Yes, I waited years to get even.
Caleb wanted to be alone, but now he'll never be alone. He'll never be able to realize his dying wish. Well, this talk has been very pleasant. Yes, indeed, but now we must get to work. I'll take you first, young lady. Please don't try to resist. I assure you I'm very strong. And really, I don't want to make you suffer.
Look out, Helen! No. I can't bind you with your flashlight, will you?
No.
You fool, I've got hold of you. I will you with my bare hands!
Oh, yeah.
I'm stronger than you, do you hear?
Come on,
turn it around this way! Nice work, Helen. You handle a hammer like a carpenter.
Oh, Hugo, I'm afraid I killed him.
No, you just stunned him, that's all, Ed. I'll tie him up in his own cord in a moment. But first, let's have a good look at him with this flashlight. Lift that white hood of his, will you, Anne?
Hugo, it's Tom Farrell, the gardener.
And so ended the case of the Lonesome Corpse, and another chapter in the memoirs of Hugo Carteret. Arthur Greystone had disappeared, only to reappear close to his brother's mausoleum as Tom Farrell, the gardener, a convenient alias. And the city of New York breathed a certain relief when this murderer, obsessed and poisoned by his macabre idea of revenge, finally went to the chair.
Shadows and stillness, mystery weaves a spell of strangest fascination, charging the mind with doubt and fear. For mystery is a strange companion, a living memory. In the haunting hour.
Haunting half hour.
Really?
Yep. Haunting half hour.
And you got 30 minutes of it. And it's, and it's so good, we got to drag it out just a little bit more. Because Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Shifting statues do not a ghost make, usually.
Here's Johnny.
Makes sense to me.
That's
makes
right.
sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you teased him, Dale. Now you have to play it.
Yeah, since we're in our lonesome mode.
Are you lonesome tonight?
This would be a really, really, really good time to get a beverage, a snack, and then come back for another old-time radio
move
show.
Move across country.
No.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff.
No.
Pete, Bela, and Boris, here you go. Are you lonesome tonight? Do you miss me tonight? Are you sorry I split you apart? I know I am.
Does your memory stray to that dark, stormy day when I zapped you and made you my sweetheart?
Does your wreck in your dungeons
seem empty and bare? Do you gaze at your doorstep? See me lying there.
Blah, blah.
Is your heart filled with pain?
Shall I stab you again?
Tell me, dear,
are you lonesome
tonight?
I wonder if you're lonesome tonight. That would be painful.
You know, someone once said that all the world's a stage.
And each must be a bat. Must play a part.
Fate had me playing a monster with you as my sweetheart.
Act one was when we met. I loved you at first stab.
You screamed your lines so cleverly and never missed a cue.
Then came act two. You seemed to change and you acted strange.
Why you never did want to go to the blood bank, I'll never know.
But you lied when you said you loved me.
So I plucked out your eyes so you could see what you were saying.
But I'd rather go on hearing your lies.
Because I cut off your lips, too.
Then go on not living without you.
And now the stage is bare, and I'm standing there with blood on my hands.
And if you won't come back to me in pieces,
then make them bring the coffin lid down.
Does the blood fill your veins?
Shall I bite you again?
Tell me, dear,
are you lonesome
tonight?
Oh, poor Will Robinson, the life he lives.
Oh, God.
Yep, that was Lonesome Monsters of Erie House.
Yep, Lonesome Monsters of Erie House.
I think of the three of us, Dave, you carry the tune the best. But in any event, that was fun to make. It was a lot of fun to make. We're just editing.
Yeah, we're fools anyway, but yeah. No, it was a lot of fun, and we have to do that every once in a while, come up with those. So.
Yep.
Keep your ears open, everybody. We'll have more of those every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And yet, we still got more of that radio stuff, yes?
We do, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You got to quiet, please. Quiet, please.
You know, you're using that voice, but I was thinking the last show we just listened to, The Haunting, half hour, I could almost picture Peter Lorre in that one. The one character could have been easily carried by Peter Lorre, I think. But what do I know?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, too. I'm not sure. It did kind of sound like Frank Lovejoy was in there. But since there are no credits, we don't really know.
I think Ernest Borgnine was in there.
It could be.
Well, was that before or after he had a tail?
During.
That's while he had a starfish on his face.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yep. In SpongeBob. Ernest Borgnine was in SpongeBob. He was the voice of...
He was the voice of
character on SpongeBob whose name eludes me. The superhero
Captain
character.
Something or other.
Starfish Face Man. I don't know.
No, and Tim Conway was his boy companion.
Yeah.
Rob Smith agrees. He agrees. Ernest Borgnine was in there. But let's get to our episode of Quiet Please called Presto Changeo, I'm sure, with our last disappearing tale of tonight.
With an air date of August 16th, 1948.
Quiet, please.
Quiet, please.
Quiet.
Broadcasting System presents Quiet, Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet, Please for tonight is called Presto Changeo, I'm Sure.
Excuse me. You really must excuse me. It's an old joke I haven't thought of in years. A joke that Johnny Martins and I used to kill ourselves over, and to me it's still funny. Probably you won't crack a smile even, but I must tell you, I really must. You say to me, Sarsfield, can you make an elephant disappear? And I say, sure, where's the elephant? That's all. But really? Well, I told you it wouldn't sound funny to you, but to me, it brings back memories. I wonder where poor Johnny Martins is. All those years, Johnny and I used to have fits. Just fits, laughing at our fun joke. That is, we did till I made an elephant disappear. Well, it takes longer to tell than that. We were standing there by the Illinois Central Freight Depot, and it was early in the morning, and the circus was in the building. And Johnny and I were watching. We were about 16 years old, I guess. And when the elephants started to come down the gangplank from the big car they were in, Johnny grinned at me, and he said, Sarsfield, can you make an elephant disappear? And I said, sure, which elephant? And Johnny said, that one. And I pointed the thing at it, and I said, Presto Changeo, disappear. So, it disappeared. And that's what set me on the first rung of the ladder to success. Well, I admit I didn't know it was going to disappear. I was pretty surprised. But if you think I was surprised, you should have seen those circus people. I never saw such a hullabaloo in all my life. They just looked everywhere for that elephant. I saw Eldred Vogelsang, the deputy sheriff, looking under the depot platform for it, even. And I never liked Eldred Vogelsang because he used to chase me for stealing marshmallows. So I pointed the thing at him and I said, Presto Changeo, disappear. But nothing happened. And Johnny said it didn't disappear. What didn't disappear, I asked him, and he said, the freight depot. Well, I said, I meant Eldred Vogelsang. And zip! Like that, Eldred Vogelsang was gone. Scared. You're darn right I was scared. So was Johnny. I didn't know what the thing was when the old man gave it to me. I was just standing in front of the Standard Theater down there on Capitol Street when this old fella came out. I know who he was. He was Professor Cagliostro, the world-famous magician, and he'd been in the show the night before. Gee, I was excited seeing him in person. I hoped he'd do something magic right there on the street. Free. And by goodness, he did. Well, he stopped and looked at me and he said, hello, Sarsfield. Well, now, how in the dickens did he know my name? I know it's a funny name. My grandfather named me. He was out in California in the gold rush in 49, and he was a member of a militia company in the town called Sarsfield, and they were the Sarsfield Grenadiers, and they carried big battle axes instead of guns. So my grandpa named me Sarsfield Grenadier McCutcheon, after the Sarsfield Grenadiers. And here was this magician calling me by name and handing me this thing and laughing and walking away. This thing. This little stick with the five-pointed star on the end. That's the foundation of my fortune, as you might say. And I've had it since the 14th of May, 1916. How does it work? It's very simple. You just point it and you say, Presto Changeo, disappear. sorry. Did you disappear? I didn't mean to. Well, somebody disappeared. Oh, that's too bad. I can't do a thing about it. That's the trouble. I haven't found out yet how to make it work in reverse. I can turn things... Darn this mosquito. Presto change, your mosquito. Be a dog. Darn it. Presto change, your dog. Disappear. You have to be careful with this thing. I remember what I did to Johnny Martin's with it. Well, we were having one of those kid quarrels. You know, nothing serious. Just arguing about the whatever it was. I've forgotten. But I said to him, you poor fish. And then I pointed the thing at him and I said, presto change. And you know what? I had to run... 6 blocks. Lickety-split on Court Street to throw him in the river in time. 6 blocks I had to run. I just made it. He swam away. I never did know what became of Johnny. Some snapping turtle ate him, I suppose, or something. The things kids will do. Oh, sure, all this stuff created quite a sensation, but nobody ever suspected me, and naturally I wasn't going to volunteer anything. Heck no, not me. Not when I can make elephants disappear. Elephants? I can make anything disappear. Anything, by golly. Even you, if you get smart with me. Because I'm not a kid any longer, see? I'm a grown-up man. I can do as I please. I'm the only guy in the world that can do just as I please. Me and the thing here. So what do you want done? No, you better not ask for it because you're liable to get it and maybe you wouldn't like it when you got it. So just keep quiet and listen. Wait a minute. I think there's somebody at the door. Yes, there is. Sit still. I'll be right back. And if it's somebody I don't want to see, I'll make him disappear for you.
Hello, Sarsfield. You remember me?
No.
You ought to, Sarsfield.
Well, I don't. What do you want?
I want this thing back.
What thing?
The thing I gave you on May 14th,
1916. Huh? Why, for goodness sakes, it's the professor.
Yes.
How are you, Professor?
Well, I'm a little tired, Sarsfield. Have you got the thing here?
Sure, I've got it. And I'm going to keep it.
Now, Sarsfield, I didn't give it to you to keep.
You didn't say that about it, Professor, on May 14th, 1916.
May I come in, please?
No.
Oh, please, Sarsfield.
You gave it to me, and I'm going to keep it.
What if I take it away from you? So you know the trick, then, eh?
Trick? What trick?
That I can't take it away from you. That it has to be given.
Well, thanks for telling me.
Oh, I wish you would give it to me. I need it.
No, thanks, Professor. But I got uses for it.
Well, will you give it to me when you are done with it? Then?
I'm not going to be done with it, Professor.
Well, if you ever are, may I have it back?
Sure. When I'm done with it.
Thank you very much, Sarsfield. So long.
Well, hey, where'd he go? Well, how do you like that? I didn't do a thing, and he disappeared just like... Gosh, he must be a real magician. Excuse me. Yeah?
Yes, I am the real magician, Sarsfield.
Who is this?
Cagliostro, Sarsfield, the professor. And I'll have you know I was a practicing magician nearly 200 years ago, Sarsfield. I'll have you know that Marie Antoinette was my friend. And I nearly lost my head over that necklace of hers. And if you look up the record, you'll see that I died in Rome in San Leone prison in 1795.
You did? You say you died?
That's what people say, and that's the way it is in the history books, Sarsfield. But just between you and me, I didn't die.
You didn't?
No, so keep a civil tongue in your head and don't forget that you promised me this thing when you are finished with it. You hear?
Yes, sir. Gosh. Now, who for goodness sake is that? I'm not going to the door. It's probably that old magician again. Hello.
No, it isn't, Southfield. It's a customer.
Oh, well, thanks. How did he know? Excuse me. Excuse me. Yes, sir? Why, hello, Bernard.
Hello, Sonnesfield.
Was there something?
Yeah. I got business with you.
Now, Bernard, that business has all been transacted.
No, it ain't, Sonnesfield. Let me in.
Now, look here, Bernard. Well, you're in.
Yeah. Now, kid.
What?
Go sit down.
Don't point that gun at me.
Why not? It's loaded.
It's liable to go off.
It might at that.
Now, Bernard.
Sit down. Here.
What's that?
That's money.
Oh?
Yeah. You remember our little deal?
Yes, I certainly do, Bernard.
This magic thing of yours was going to turn $1 bills into $100 bills.
Well, of course. I did it.
You sure did. And Larry Blockman's in jail.
Larry Blockman's in jail?
Yeah.
What for goodness sakes?
For passing phony $100 bills, for goodness sakes. All this dough you fixed for me is counterfeit.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Yeah, that's what I said, too. I just came here to blow your head off, Sonsfield. You and your magic.
Well, I can't help it. I did my best.
And it ain't good enough. So I'm going to knock you off.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, Sonsfield.
Wait, Bernard.
Put that thing down.
Oh, no, I won't.
That phony magic gang, put it down.
Do you think it's phony, Bernard? Why, you... big gorilla, presto changeo. Help! Help! Oh, the presto changeo disappeared!
Part one. No. Quiet, please.
Presto changeo disappear. Disappear. Dale can make us... Dale has a magic wand, too. He can press the button and put us in mute. He can do that.
I can
yes,
do that.
He can.
I just simply choose not to.
Usually. he has the power. The power, I tell you.
Actually, Dave has the power, too. Dave has the power.
I only when you're temporarily indisposed is the only time I use my power, though.
I know. He only the difference between Dave and I, Dave uses his powers for good.
Yeah. Something like that. Something like
yep.
that. Yes.
That's the big difference between us. So. And someone, let's take care of this now. The name Keenan Wynn was bantied about, was it not?
Yes, it was. Wondering if it was Keenan Wynn in there and actually was Ernest Chappell. And I did kind of notice some of the similarities for Keenan Wynn back during the radio days as well.
And we have a little something in which... someone imitates Keenan Wynn deliberately.
Actually, imitates his father, Edwin.
Yeah.
Yes.
Edwin.
Edwin. Yes.
Dad, Pops. And Pops. This one's a little tune from Spike Jonze.
Yep.
Here we go. And it's wonderful.
I'm sure you'll agree, like Crosby's horses winning races and Benny playing the bee. But here in Hollywood, there's one thing on which you can bank every time, because it never, never happens, and I'll bet my very last dime. California, how true, how true, how true. It never rains in sunny California, but what a lot of dew. The sun is shining all the time, it shines where'er you float. The scenery is so lovely to see if you own a glass-bottom boat. But it never rains in sunny California, there is sunshine all the time.
In sunny California. Of course, Doc, how perfectly absurd. It never rains in Southern California. The Chamber of Commerce did its worst. The liquid sun keeps pouring down, it's so hard to explain. If you're not a Californian, you'd swear that it was rain. It never rains in Southern California. No. I heard some people say that it never rains in Southern California, as they swam past me out in the valley the other day. And in my backyard, I had a victory garden, stretching greens. I went out there this morning and found a Japanese submarine. No, but it never rains in Southern California. It's a cloudburst! Oh, oh.
There you go.
The great Red Engel, you may recognize him from the Spike Jonze song Chloe, the original recorded RCA record Chloe. And he went on to do some other things. He was actually was a really good saxophonist. He was somewhat known before he joined Spike, and went on to do some other programs as well after that. So,
yep. And we still got plenty of time to wrap up. Quiet, please.
Quiet, please.
With Presto Changeo, I'm sure.
Man.
Quiet.
I made that just in time. Darn him, I thought I said disappear, but I turned him into a gorilla. My goodness, was he ferocious. Well, he disappeared anyway.
You nearly made a mistake, Southfield.
Huh? Where did you come from?
Oh, out there.
Where?
You wouldn't want to give me the magic wand now, Southfield, before you make a really serious mistake, would you?
No.
Well, you might be sorry. Making counterfeit money, turning the man into a gorilla. I wouldn't make any mistakes like that, Southfield.
You wouldn't, huh?
Oh, my, no. I very seldom make mistakes.
Well, here's one for you. Presto Changeo disappears. Presto Changeo disappears!
It won't work on me, Southfield.
Well, why?
I am a professional, Southfield. Look, abracadabra!
gracious. Now where did they go? Well, now you see what I have to go through. It isn't all beer and griddles when you...
Skittles.
What? Who said that?
I did. Excuse me.
What did you say?
Skittles, Southfield. Beer and Skittles.
Oh, well, what are Skittles if you're such a magician?
Skittles is a game, something like ninepins, Southfield. I used to play it with King Louis XV of France. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Don't let me go on.
What was I saying? It isn't all beer and, Skittles?
Skittles.
Skittles when you get hold of a magic thing like this. You see, you make one false move and you're in a jam. How did I know that money would turn out counterfeit? And again, I might have been murdered by that gorilla. If I wasn't such a sharp character, I don't know what I'd do. What?
I nearly said a hand, Southfield.
I wish to goodness you'd go away, Professor.
Oh, I'm sorry, Southfield. I'll go. I'll probably see you before long.
Oh, my gosh. This is my day for... Oh, I know who that is. Are you gone? Professor, are you gone? I know who it is because... She rings the doorbell instead of knocking.
It's his girl. She's very pretty.
She sure is. Hey, you said you were gone.
Oh, I am sorry, Southfield, really. I'll really go this time. Honest Injun, Southfield. Really, truly.
Well, goodbye. Excuse me, please. Genevieve.
Well, you certainly kept me waiting long enough, Popsy.
Well, I'm sorry, Angel.
I bet you had another visitor.
Well, I...
A feminine visitor, Starfield?
Oh, my goodness, no. With a beard?
Look at all the money. Where'd you get the money, Starfield?
Why, a man gave it to me.
Come now, Starfield. You expect me to believe that?
Well, he did.
Oh, I wish a nice man would give poor little me some of the nice money.
Well,
Poor little me has only got $1 bill. You've got $100 bills.
Oh, yes, I know, Genevieve, but
I... Nice man wouldn't miss a little teensy bit of the money now, would he?
Well, Genevieve, you see, I mean... You know, I...
Is it really yours, Starfield?
Well, in a way, dearest.
Oh, I wish I had some, too.
Well, you see, I... No, I can't let you have it.
My goodness, Starfield, I didn't think you were stingy.
Well, I'm not, but...
You're mean.
No, dear.
You stole it.
No, I didn't.
You murdered somebody for it.
Oh, gosh, no.
Then where did you get it?
Well, honey, it's...
Blood money.
It's magic.
Well, for heaven's sake.
Yes.
How is it magic?
Well, I did it with my magic wand.
Why, how nice.
But it's...
Can you do magic, Starfield?
Well, sure, but...
Magic.
Well, I don't...
I bet you can. I bet you're kidding.
Oh, no. No, indeed, Genevieve.
Well, do something magic, then. Make some more money.
Excuse me, Southfield.
What?
I didn't say anything, honey.
Well, what is... who is it?
Who, me?
Your wife is coming, Southfield.
Oh, my gosh. Well, how did she know...
How did you know what, Southfield?
How did she know where I was, Professor?
I told her, Southfield.
Oh, my gosh. What'll I do now?
What's the matter, Angel Faye?
Oh, you got to get out of here.
Well, I like that. I certainly appreciate that. Why do I have to get out of here? Don't you love me?
Genevieve, meeting my wife.
How do you do? Well, for Pete's sake...
Huh? Now, dear.
I really must go now. Nice to have met you. Oh, no.
Huh?
Help! Starfield!
Oh, the presto changeo disappears.
Well, where'd she go?
Wow.
Sir?
Oh, I did it just in time.
Oh, that's the magic thing.
Yes. Wow. Just in time again.
I want to see it.
Don't touch it, Genevieve.
Oh, now, Starfield. I won't hurt it.
Please, honey.
Is it really magic?
It really is, dear. Please let me have it.
I don't see any trigger or anything.
But there isn't any. Please put it down, Genevieve.
Well, then what makes it work?
Genevieve, please. Please.
You just pointed it at her like this.
Don't point it at me.
And you said,
Genevieve, don't.
You said,
He said, presto changeo, young lady.
What? Presto changeo?
Genevieve, professor.
He said something else. Oh, I know.
Give me that.
I know. You said disappear. Why, my goodness. He certainly went away in a hurry.
Oh. My goodness, what happened to me? Oh, Genevieve. Oh, my gosh. Oh, where am I? Hey, where am I?
Hi, Starfield.
Who's that? I can't see.
It's me, Starfield. Professor Cagliostro.
Oh, good. Let me out of here, Professor, will you? I'm scared.
You can't get out of here, Starfield. You're here to stay. Remember, the wand won't work in reverse. Too bad. But I told you you'd make a mistake.
Well, what is this place?
Why, that's just what it is, boy. This is the place where things go when they disappear.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you're going to have a wonderful time with the people here.
What people?
Why, don't you remember? An elephant, and a deputy sheriff, and a boy you turned into a fish, and a very, very angry gorilla.
Oh, no!
And your wife.
Oh, no!
And, oh, boy, Starfield, is she going to be tickled to see you. Well, you asked for it.
The title of tonight's Quiet Please story was Presto Changeo, I'm Sure. It was written and directed by Willis Cooper, and the man who spoke to you was Ernest Chappell.
And Edgar Staley was the professor. The distasteful Bernard was the immaculate and talented Mr. Ed Latimer. Charming Miss Peggy Stanley played Genevieve. And the masterful dog and the gorilla were by the one and only Brad Barker. As usual, music is by Albert Berman. Now for a word about Quiet Please next week, here is our writer-director, Willis Cooper.
You didn't recognize anybody tonight, did you? Well, you shouldn't have. They're all natives of my typewriter, and they never did exist before. Next week's story is called 3,000 Words.
And so, until next week at the same time, I am quietly yours, Ernest Chappell.
As much as we would like to forget about the last war and turn our hopes and efforts away from the death and destruction caused overseas, the situation in many European countries demands our attention. You've heard it on the radio. You've read it in your daily papers. Men, women, and children in war-devastated areas are slowly starving to death. Most especially, the children are suffering. Their daily diets are often inadequate to sustain life. As always, in the midst of starvation, disease reaps a horrible toll. Tuberculosis, rickets, pellagra, and other diseases are spreading, with children the chief victims. Many private American agencies have been sending as much help as they could. Now 25 well-established relief agencies have combined into a single drive to save the next generation. We ask you to send your contributions to the Crusade for Children in New York. This program is heard in Canada through the facilities of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
That was a nasty door, or I hope it was a door. That little squeak there.
No, I'm sorry, that was my chair. That was my chair. I was squeaky
oh,
chair.
Phew. That's a relief.
Squeaky chair. Probably squeaky chair.
Going to
yeah.
have to clear the studio or something.
Nothing but... up my sleeve. Time for a new chair.
Hey, no. I like my chair.
Thank you, Garwinkle. Now you have to do the moral as Garwinkle. Erie House Radio proudly presents Garwinkle's Moral of the Story.
Kismet or fate can be. You pay for what you give. And sometimes it's spelled M-A-G-I-C.
Must have the wrong side of the
head. Oh, that one's jerky. I'm in the mood for a little groovy music. We got some time to maybe perhaps play a little more radio fun, share a little more info, and let you know that we will have more disappearances tomorrow. Tomorrow at CBS Radio Mystery Theater, once again with The Recluse. Is there a story about a spider? No, I don't think so.
No.
But it's from 77.
So it's Howard Hughes.
Hey.
The Recluse.
Yeah. There you go.
No, that's tomorrow.
You watch me pull a recluse out of my head.
You know, I was mentioned in one of his 77 wills, so.
Amazing. Yeah, I was on one of those wills from Howard Hughes, I think.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I asked him to mention me. He said, and as for Dave Binkley, I mentioned you. Ah, okay.
Yeah, Cash would have been better.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
And so our show's tomorrow at 6:30 Eastern with CBS Radio Mystery Theater, and it ends auspiciously at 8 o'clock. What happens at 8 tomorrow Eastern?
We turn into a pumpkin.
Yeah, I'm all for pumpkin pie. Or it could be the Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul on twitch.org.watch.q.
And you can always find him on the Books of Facing. There's always a link on his page.
Yes.
To get on over to Twitching. And then you'll be Twitching while you're watching the Gar the Ghoul. Yeah.
Ja.
Oh, yeah.
Big crowd tonight. Big crowd tonight. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. And then next weekend, Dave found a little something to do that he thought was better than hanging around here.
I'll be disappearing next weekend.
And it is, actually. as he gets inducted into the Horror Host Hall of Fame, deservedly, and at last, Dave is being immortalized. Literally, I'm not joking, in the Horror Host Hall of Fame. and we'll have a guest host. What guest host will we have next Saturday, next week Saturday? Why, it's the delightful CW will be joining me.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah. And we got good topic for next week. We get into that later because we got time maybe for a little bit of Stan Freeberg maybe. Could be.
Ooh, okay.
Newspapers are just as good an advertising medium as radio.
Sure, driving home at night, you can enjoy your newspaper as it lies there on the seat. And there's another good thing about newspapers. You can read them while you're rushing to get ready for work in the morning, right?
Who listens to radio? That go-where-you-go medium called radio. That's with you every night through the long commuter fight. And in the morning with your toast and mama lady-o. Who listens to radio? No matter if it's summer, winter, spring or fall. Who listens to radio? Only 150 million.
150
yep.
million. Well, at least 8 or 12, but still, thanks everyone for listening live to our show. And for those of you listening in the archives, a nice heartwarming tale here. His funeral DM kept winking in and out. Well, he had a flat tire, and a AAA guy came to help him out. He asked him what he was listening to, and he said, Erie House Radio, of course. And we might have a new fan.
And he got slugged. No, what happened?
He got mugged.
Hey,
he
before we sign off here.
$50 to throw in.
Yeah. Before we sign off here, Gar had some wonderful thoughts about Labor Day, did you not, Gar?
Not any. Oh, that.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, it was something.
It was your suggestion, sir.
It was...
What happens on Labor Day when we're kids? It's the Labor Day telethon with Jerry Lewis.
That, and the last one was in 2010.
Yes, and Gar wanted us to bring attention to that fact. It does bring a lot. You know, it meant a lot to you, Gar, as a kid. It meant a lot to me. I'm sure you, Dave, as well. There was some great acts, and Jerry still didn't look pretty good back then yet. He wasn't falling apart quite yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I recall it being the one time of the year where you only had two TV stations instead of three because that other one got sectioned off with that darn telethon. But
but it was great. It was. And
as a kid, did you sit there and watch the telethon and for hours on end, or were you like,
I watched some of it. I cherry-picked for certain acts and things like that.
Yeah, I did too. I did watch some, but I didn't sit there and watch the whole thing, no.
But I liked the beginning, some people, as you mentioned, Gar, thought it's kind of depressing because it was about muscular dystrophy. But at the same time, look at the great good he did and all the money he raised to help kids that have that.
My friend wasn't depressed about the MDA as much as he was about it heralded in the end of summer and that we had to go back to school the next day after it was over. So, yeah, and I was like, really? Because for me, it was an indicator that the next Saturday coming up, we'd have brand new cartoons on Saturday morning.
Labor Day is the only day Al Bundy could get pegged to do chores around the house. There's a hilarious episode about that. I'm Married with Children.
Yeah.
Our clock is way off, so I don't know if our sign out is going to be timed right, folks. It's about 22 seconds off, but we'll see what we can do to make this work. Join us tomorrow again at 6:30 for CBS Radio Mystery Theater, and then after our show at 8, get on over to Twitch and check out Huddable Huddle starring.
I don't know. Some guy named Gar. I don't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
Crazy guy.
He's a gerbil, right?
Yeah.
He's a gerbil.
We don't keep gerbils.
He's a gerbil?
Here.
What?
That's a dark, 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 dark story.
That's
the castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And him
wait,
too.
Wait.
When next we meet in Frankenstone.
Oh, gerbils a lot.
Don't come alone.
Or rolls of toilet paper. Bye and good luck in prison.
Hey, there you go.
I you know what? I timed up how far we were off, and I got kind of lucky there.
Yeah. I still have I was like 40 seconds off on my timer. It's crazy.
You know what I was good at, Dave, when I was doing college radio at Baldwin Wallace? I was not a student there, but I took courses and stuff. And, you know, they were playing...
Did you put them back?
Alternative music for the most part. I was really, really good at back timing. Like, everybody would, you know, all the kids, the college kids would stress when the top of the hour came and you had to play a 10-second leader prior to the hour to go into the news. You know, there was a feed for the news for like about two 3 minutes going to the next hour, even at this college station. And they're like,
right.
You never panic. How do you do this? And whatever. I says, well, whatever. Because we were free to pick songs. There was like a color labeling system. And they were still doing vinyl, okay? This was probably in the early 90s. I was at this college station, right? So it was simple. I said, just find a song with a redundant ending that's pretty close to enough time to go into the lead-in, and then you just start tailing it out with 15 seconds to go, and at 10 seconds you hit the leader and the thing. I says, you don't even have to count. It's a redundant ending. Nobody's going to really pick up much on that, or they're going to understand that we had a time thing. And there you go.
Yep.
And there you go.
A trick I learned in the nightclubs, actually, playing vinyl.
One thing that was kind of landmark on the MDA telethon was the final reunion for Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis that happened on that telethon. And I think it was said that Dean was like, I don't even know what the rift was, but I sure do wish I never would have showed up on that telethon. No, he didn't say that.
Are you talking about when they like reunited Martin, at the telethon?
Yes.
Right, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
It was kind of scheduled. I think Sinatra had something to do with it.
Frank Sinatra kind of pulled it as a surprise on both. Well, I mean, Dean knew it, but Jerry had no idea Dean was going to show up.
Right.
And Dean always being kind of almost a second banana to Jerry on their partnership, said as soon as and of course Jerry didn't know. He said, so how are you? What are you doing? You know, he said, oh, my God, I felt just like I did, 15 years before that, you know. So, yeah, it was odd that towards the end of Dean's life, he turned back to Jerry when Dean lost his son. Jerry reached out to him, and from that point on, almost every day, they had a conversation on the phone until Dean passed himself. So it was... they kind of refound the friendship they once had there at the end of Dean's life. So
I haven't heard a whole lot of really positive stories about Mr. Lewis himself.
He was supposed to be a grumpy sort, and he was playing himself in what's that movie with De Niro?
King
Bernhardt.
King of Comedy. The
King of Comedy.
Or something like that.
King of Comedy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They kidnap De Niro's like this wannabe stand-up
Johnny
comic.
Carson. I thought it was like a Johnny Carson type guy.
Or a Johnny Carson type. And Jerry Lewis is actually one in this movie. And De Niro and Sandra Bernhardt go about the business of kidnapping him. And... you know, holding him ransom so he could host the show. It's funny.
But I think the biggest problem with Jerry Lewis, he had a tremendous amount of talent for doing many things, but I think at a certain point he just took himself way too seriously.
Yeah.
And that ruins so much when you take yourself seriously like that.
Yeah, I think he got a little arrogant there because you could tell some of the biting comments, even the people that interviewed him. He had an assertive tongue, let us say.
I heard this wild anecdote about him running across an actor that apparently did nothing but study his films. And there was a film called Bela Lugosi Meets the Gorilla.
Yeah.
And there was an actor.
Sammy Petrillo and what's the other one, Dave?
I'd have to look that up, but yeah.
Petrillo and this other guy that they did a Lewis and Martin impression.
They had made a living doing that in nightclubs.
Yes. And Jerry Lewis got him blackballed or something, so he couldn't work. It was very bizarre. To his face, he said, "I'm going to make you a star. This is amazing. It's amazing how right, you know, you're like an exact copy of me. It's amazing." And then behind the scenes, he was like, "Yeah, we need to get rid of this guy." That's pretty rough.
Yeah, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it. In a way, you want to protect your intellectual property, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, hardball
in the same breath, the guy was perpetuating, you know, that you being, you know, a household word, sort of. So, because I don't remember that actor's name at all, but I remember Jerry Lewis. And when I saw the guy was acting like Jerry Lewis, I didn't go, "Oh, that's that actor guy." Instead, I was like, "Oh, he's doing an impression of Lewis." Okay. Yeah. So one way, yes, in one way, no.
That's what I mean. I have mixed views on that because in a way I feel for Jerry Lewis and in a way I feel for the kid. So.
Mm-hmm. When you hear the story and it was like, Lewis
pretty
came
vicious.
Up to him and was like, "Oh man, this is amazing. I'm going to make you a star." And then he did what he did. Not too good. If you're going to deep sick someone, go ahead and just tell them. Okay. You know.
Yeah. It was Duke Mitchell and Sammy Petrillo.
That's it. Duke Mitchell. Yeah. And they were pretty good impressionists, I thought. I mean,
they were. Yeah. That was a fair impression, but you're right to be able to do that and technically steal their act, which is what they did, and put it in a movie. And I'm not so sure they did do it to try and get bought off.
Lewis tried to deep six that movie, Lugosi and the gorilla thing. That was part of the story. The kickoff was that Lewis did everything he could to get that deep six, but it was already out. It was already out there and.
Too late, Jerry. Telephone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Here's one review. After I watched every Martin and Lewis movie, you knew bootleg Martin and Lewis had to come next, right? And let me tell you, if you ever wanted to truly appreciate Jerry Lewis, the quickest route is by watching Sammy Petrillo and Duke Mitchell doing their best impression and then promptly tumbling straight down into the deep, dark, uncanny valley, never to be heard from again, as the film is honestly not that much worse than the vast majority of Martin and Lewis flicks. Honestly, it's somewhere between Crosby and Hope Road with the Island of Dr. Moreau, but with Bela Lugosi. But boy, these guys are stiff as boards in the yucks department.
Mm-hmm.
So.
That's a good summation.
Mm-hmm. Now, one other anecdote I've got about the MDA telethon was something I heard. We had a bozo program local in Virginia, and bozo had a co-host, and the co-host was a little dog puppet, a very sharp-witted puppet.
Sure. Yeah.
In fact, in my memory, the puppet could have cussed and you know, except it was a Bozo show, so I'm sure it didn't. But it was very biting towards Bozo. They had this chemistry. Anyway, so the MDA collected in every, you know, viewing area all over the place, and then they would get someone from that local viewing to represent, and they would show up and go, "Hi, Jerry, this is my check." And Jerry would, you know, go, "Oh, well, that's wonderful, amazing." And so they sent the puppet and to New York to meet Jerry. And the one thing they told the puppeteer was, "Don't say anything about Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis. They don't mention it. Don't mention Dean Martin's name around Jerry. You know, no, nothing, not a word, nothing." And the guy was like, "I got you. All right, no problem." And so he gets up there, and the puppeteer's behind the booth, and the puppet's up there, and he goes, "And now from Virginia, here we go, we got him." You know, and he goes over there, and the puppet says, "I like Dino better." And they said, you could have heard a pin drop. And it was just absolute quiet. And then Jerry busted out laughing. And then after that point, him and the puppeteer knew each other until the puppeteer's death. They constantly stayed in contact. But that was just a weird muscular dystrophy association telethon moment.
Yeah. That's an amazing story. Because that could have ended badly.
Oh, it could, yeah. You know, I don't know what they could have done.
First time a puppet gets strangled on live television. Yeah.
Yeah, it could have been. And that would have gone off really poorly.
I don't know. If Jerry wore the light blue suit, I think that would be okay. And go hi-oh while he's doing it, then it'd be all right.
Oh, yeah, maybe. I don't know. that's crazy because it hit kind of close to me, and the fact that when I was a young kid, I watched the Bozo and I saw the puppet, and I was even on that Bozo program once, and won some toys and stuff from some of the games.
Really?
Yes.
That's
yes.
Cool.
So I had a slight connection to it, and then I heard that write-up about the puppet going all the way to New York to present the monies collected in the viewing area, and then to hear what that puppet did. That puppeteer just had so much moxie. I don't know.
Yeah. Might say that a different way, but he had a lot of brass courage.
Dog bones. A lot of dog bones in that.
A lot
puppet,
of dog
yeah.
bones. Yes, he did.
A lot of dog bones.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the thing about being a puppet. You can get away with things like, you know, Charlie McCarthy was practically the alter ego to Edgar Bergen, you know. And so when you are a puppet, you can get away with things that people can't get away with.
Like the insult dog thing.
Yes. Oh, the insult dog was amazing. But there are so many science fiction little things. I think there's some in the Twilight Zone, some in the Outer Limits, where the ventriloquist puppet is evil.
There were two on Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
There was one with Cliff Robertson, and who's the other one, Dave? You're good with these Twilight Zones.
Oh, man.
Not the talking doll, not talking Tina. There were two.
Jackie Cooper.
Jackie Cooper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
And I think one of them actually had a small person that portrayed the puppet.
That, I believe, sir, was a movie. What the heck is
Maybe
the name of it?
Magic?
Magic?
Is that Magic?
No. The one with the midget that I'm thinking of is like from the 60s, and I can't remember the title of it.
I want to say it's a black and white film, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, it is. And, oh, gosh, what is the name of it?
I just see him rounding the corner right past the doorway. He kind of walked, I don't know. But, no, yeah, see, and to me, I've always felt that if you get into the ventriloquist stuff, you know, you're definitely letting your schizophrenia get shine through. You need to definitely probably stay away from that stuff.
Let's check the ventriloquist dummies movie list. by All Horror.
Yeah, there you go.
Magic is one of
them. Isn't that tattooed on your arm?
There it is. Devil Doll from 1964.
Ah, there you go. Ugh. Oh, those freaking puppets. I have fun bringing out. I've got the Sesame Street, the Count. I've got, I think I've got
wonderful,
Oscar the Grouch.
Wonderful.
And I've got the Cookie Monster. All of these are from like 1973. Child guidance hand puppets, and they're fun. They're cute, you know. But yeah, I don't get too wrapped up in it. The Count's
okay.
Fun. Yeah, because the Count is just, you know. Just a count. One, two, three, you know. And
Devil Doll is a 1964 British horror film about an evil ventriloquist, the great Varelli, and his dummy Hugo. They perform before a packed audience in London. The audience observes tension between the ventriloquist and his dummy. It's a long story, but I do remember they had a midget, you know, excuse
yes.
me, a diminutive person.
A
little person inside of there.
Yes.
I remember seeing it once long, long ago, and it was pretty creepy.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Pretty creepy.
Yep, those things
are. You know,
kind
of... and we also aired it, if you go back in the archives, a story very similar to that, and the escape pilot,
oh, yeah.
Dead of Night. We had that. We aired that, and another one with a good old ventriloquist dummy there.
Yep.
Yeah. The only thing about those is when they get a knife and the knife is so heavy they can't hold it up. You know, it drags on the floor. You know, it's just tension building.
That's all right.
Cloth arms. You know, they got no elbows. Yeah. Oh. Oh yeah. So yeah, lots of telethon memories every year for years and years. Well, all throughout my childhood that was going on.
I remember I think Gary, you were also a fan of the, and Dave too, I think, of the Animaniacs, the Spielberg cartoons.
Yes. They were
sort of an homage to the old Warner Brothers cartoons, and they constantly had a character of Jerry Lewis in there, either as a cameo or even a whole skit. Oh, lady with the light blue
walk
suit.
Walk on, walk
and,
off. Yes.
Yeah. When do we ever will? And Billy Crystal did his voice, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And there was another cartoon that popped up around the time of the Animaniacs called Freakazoid.
Oh, I love Freakazoid.
Ed Asner was the police chief voice. And he passed away this last week or so.
I think Dave just messaged us. He got cut off, and he's no longer in the studio.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Okay. All right, well, then I'll let you run down
the
curtain.
Don't want to hang around with me, huh? I see how you are.
Yeah, I got to go. I got no protection here.
None. You're trapped in the eerie house.
So, yeah, so Ed Asner passed recently, but he was the voice of the Detective Cosgrove or something like that.
I can explain my whereabouts.
Okay.
I was nowhere near Ed Asner.
I
was nowhere near Ed Asner. Nowhere.
I got nothing, so I'm not saying nothing.
All right. Tomorrow, 6:30.
Yes.
More us.
Jimmy Durante time.
Team. This guy.
Mm-hmm.
Happy Labor Day, folks.
All right.
Night.
Take care. Blah, blah. Good night.
Good night, Jimmy.
Good night. Good night. Good night. It's time to say good night. Good night. Good night. What for is this say but good night? We've had a few laughs.
and it's time for toodaloo. Aribo, up we the thing, and it could think a do.
Good night. Good night.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.